Good evening. This is Jesse Fisher, starting our Sunday evening Building Zion conference call. Tonight, well, I should probably introduce, for any new listeners, introduce kind of what we're doing. We started off having an on teleconference call conversation a couple of months ago. With Andrea, who's often on the call, and talking about some thoughts we were having, discussing on the Zion Society Facebook page, and thought it would be easier to talk about them on a conference call, so we did that. And you can find all of the calls we've done since then on buildingzion.org/calls. And what I've been doing for the last 9 or so calls is, for the first half, sharing some quotes that I dug up from the mid-1800s, that reflect the apostles and prophets of the LDS Church, their viewpoint on building Zion. And I've been dividing these up, these 500-plus quotes, up into categories and subcategories in preparation for these calls each week. And this week, the subcategory I've called "What Holds Us Back from Building Zion." This is one of the smaller categories. There's only 12 or 13 quotes in this category, but they're pretty interesting, and I think you'll find them fascinating. And then usually the second half of the call, whoever happens to be on the call, we talk about what can we do today, what can we do now, in preparing ourselves and our families for possible participation in a real-life Zion Society or Zion preparatory communities we might have occasion to build. So I will go ahead with sharing some of these quotes. There were really basically only two people, Brigham Young and George Q. Cannon, who was in the First Presidency for quite some time. And both of them, I've got quotes from both of them that are pretty interesting. One that Brigham gave, usually, and when there's a whole lot of quotes in a particular category, I usually only read them if there's two or three about a single subcategory, so that we can feel assured that that subcategory wasn't just a fluke of passing idea. But unfortunately, in this category, I only found, like I say, 12 or 13 that applied. So this first one from Brigham Young, he basically attributed a lack of righteousness among the saints as to what holds us back. And that's in 1858, he said, "We have talked about redeeming Zion, but the people are not yet righteous enough to receive and build up Zion in its purity, though they are growing into it." That was in 1858, 60-something years ago. The saints were growing into it, into being righteous enough to build Zion. You would think in the time since then, we would have long since grown into it. Another reason Brigham Young gave in 1867 is that of unbelief. And let me read this quote. "We say we believe Joseph was a prophet, that he had the priesthood and was called of God to gather the people together and establish Zion. If we believe this, why not let our lives prove that we believe the doctrine that we profess? It is a very dark picture to look upon, a sad affair that we disbelieve our own doctrines. Let us remember them and live accordingly." Ouch. We say we believe Joseph is a prophet and that he revealed that he was called of God to gather the people and build Zion, but our lives don't seem to suggest that we believe that. Then the other two or three quotes I have here from Brigham fit in the subcategory of selfishness, that selfishness is what holds us back from building Zion. And that was definitely the most common theme among these quotes. This quote is quite fairly long, but it's pretty instructive. It's from 1867, which is about, if I remember right, that's about the time the saints were really getting into starting to build cooperatives. He uses the term mechanics, and what that means, the word we would use today is craftsman. He starts out, "And our mechanics, do they labor for the express purpose of building up Zion in the kingdom of God? I'm sorry to say that I think there are but very few into whose hearts it has entered, or whose thoughts are occupied in the least with such a principle. But it is, quote, how much can I make, end quote, if our mechanics would work upon the principle of establishing the kingdom of God upon the earth and building up Zion, they would, as the prophet Joseph said in the year 1833, never do another day's work, but with that end in view," in other words, of building Zion. "In that year, a number of elders came up to Kirtland. I think there were some 20 or 30 elders. Brother Joseph gave us the word of the Lord. It was simply this, quote, never do another day's work to build up a Gentile city. Never lay out another dollar while you live to advance the world in its present state. It is full of wickedness and violence. No regard is paid to the prophets, nor to Jesus, nor his sayings, nor the word of the Lord that was given anciently, nor to that word of the Lord given in our day. They have gone astray. They are building up themselves, and they are promoting sin and iniquity upon the earth. And, said he, it is the word and commandment of the Lord to his servants that they shall never do another day's work, nor spend another dollar to build up a Gentile city or nation," end quote. Wow. So according to Brigham, Joseph taught that we should not work a day in our lives or spend a dollar in the Gentiles' economy. That's a pretty sobering statement because, you know, if we leave his employ, what will become of us? We have been trained to fear that we can't provide for ourselves unless we participate in Babylon. So those are some quotes by Brigham Young on this issue of what holds us back from building Zion. George Q. Cannon, who apparently was quite the philosophical leader in the whole cooperative movement during the 1800s in Utah, he had quite a bit to say about this. What's holding us back? One quote of his from 1889, he basically said, what's holding us back is our unwillingness to follow our leader's counsel. And another common or another theme that he spoke about was our love of Babylon. We just plain don't want to give up Babylon for Zion. And here's a good quote along those lines from 1883. "God has commanded us to forsake Babylon. He has called us out from Babylon. But though we have come out from Babylon to Utah, we have brought to a great extent Babylon with us. The love of Babylon, the love of that which God abhors and which he commands us to forsake, we have brought it with us, and to a great extent, we cherish it." And this is the great obstacle in the way of building up Zion. I'm not sure if it's mentioned in one of these quotes, but one of the things they're referring to that I've read elsewhere, I believe, is that we have a skewed, that they've said that we have a skewed view of the value of private property. And I know that just blows up in the face of most American Mormons, because we've been taught to worship at the altar of capitalism. And most of us who've been trained that way believe that either if someone isn't for capitalism, then they're for socialism and there's no alternative. Well, that's a seesaw that we can actually get off of, the capitalism-socialism seesaw. The Lord's plan, economic plan for his children, is neither of those. And there's gobs of evidence for that statement. Love of Babylon, so that's another one of his, George Q. Cannon's, points. In fact, yeah, that's good enough for that. Selfishness, again, is a big theme. And there's a couple of good quotes here from George Q. Cannon. I'll read them both. So this is George Q. Cannon, 1882. Hang on a sec. The time must come when the talent of men of business shall be used for the benefit of this whole people, just as the talent of President Taylor and that of the 12 apostles, as their talent is used for the benefit of Zion, so must the talent of men who are gifted with business capacity be used in like manner, not for individual benefit alone, not for individual aggrandizement alone, but for the benefit of the whole people, to uplift the masses, to rescue them from their poverty. That is one of the objects in establishing Zion. And anything short of that, as I have said, is not Zion. It is not the Zion that the prophets have foreseen. It is not that which God has promised. I suppose I am as selfish as other men. I would like to benefit my own family. I have to war against this feeling, as all have. I do not know that I am any worse than any other people, but I know this feeling has to be warred against. The tendency of human nature is to look after one's own dear self, to look after one's own family, to use one's talent for one's own and their benefit, without bestowing any benefit upon the people of God. Yet I know this is not a right feeling. So he's pointing out the fact that, well, this really was essentially making two points. The first point was that just as our modern LDS apostles and prophets have dedicated their lives to the spiritual blessing of the church, so should our men of business, our people who are talented in wielding productive capital, should dedicate their lives to benefiting the people in the church, for the elimination of poverty, which is a key element of building Zion. And then his second point is that this doesn't come naturally. The natural man says, I'm going to look after me and mine, and to heck with all you guys. But we have to overcome that if we're to ever build a Zion society and be willing to love our neighbor as ourselves, basically, to seek the benefit of our neighbor. So let's see. The other quote I wanted to read by him was from 1889. In fact, this is the longest one, so bear with me, but it's a good one. The time must come in Zion when a new order of things will be established in regard to temporal matters. I probably should stop and go back. If you're new to this call, you haven't been with us the last 8 or 9 weeks, where we've made it blatantly obvious by reading quotes from the brethren during that time period, that to them, building Zion was mostly an economic activity, which you're probably not familiar with that concept. The church, it became very clear, especially under John Taylor, that they saw the church as the religious organization of the people, the kingdom as the political organization of God's people, and Zion as the economic organization of God's people, and that you can't have a true Enoch-like Zion society without those three elements. So now when I read this quote, and I probably should have mentioned this point earlier, you understand that when they talk about temporal matters, they didn't use the word economic like we use it. To them, if something was economic, it means it was prudent or economical, a wise use of resources, and not how we use the term economic, meaning relating to the production and distribution of goods and services. The system of that production. So when they talk about temporal matters, you translate that in your mind to economic. Okay, so here's the quote. The time must come in Zion when a new order of things will be established in regards to temporal matters. We all look forward to it. We pray for it. We all labor for it. That is, all who have the love of Zion at heart. And we deprecate and deplore everything that would retard us in this direction. The spirit of selfishness appears to be prevalent, the spirit of self-aggrandizement, and we deplore its manifestation. We would like to see the Latter-day Saints receive the counsels of heaven in this respect, to love their neighbors as themselves. This is the counsel of God, and the burden of the preaching of the elders of this church should be to endeavor to get the Latter-day Saints to see the importance of this principle, to be unselfish. God will bless the man who loves his neighbor, who seeks to promote his neighbor's interest. I do not care what his situation may be. He may be humble and obscure, whoever he may be. If he seeks to promote his neighbor's interest, he will find that God will bless him, and he will do everything for the man that will be good for him. We must cultivate this spirit. We must seek for it and struggle for it. The spirit of selfishness is in the earth, every man for himself. And this spirit comes into our borders, and we partake of it to a greater or less extent. Nevertheless, the time will come when this will be changed. God will bring it about. He will bring us through circumstances that will make us know the evil of it, and make us see the necessity of cultivating the principle of unselfishness in our midst. Selfishness is our weak point today. The fact that we are organizing after the fashion of the world, in other words, organizing economically in business after the fashion of the world, and that every man is for himself to a great extent, is our weak point. And to guard against it, we should be careful not to permit that spirit to enter into our hearts. End quote. That's tough. That is tough. This past week, I tried to find some other quotes that kind of fit in this category, and the best one I could find was from 1899. Matthias F. Cowley, an apostle, made a statement that I find fascinating, and I posted it to a discussion group on Facebook just to see what kind of response I would get. And anyway, here's the quote. The trouble with us, meaning we Latter-day Saints, is to a certain extent, we are Latter-day Saints religiously, but Gentiles financially. We are not controlled in the business affairs of life by that spirit of the gospel which blesses and sanctifies all temporal transactions and makes them spiritual in the sight of God. So in other words, he's saying we're living the gospel as regards to religious issues, but economically we're as much Gentiles as the next guy because we don't organize ourselves and apply gospel principles to the workplace. That one's a tough one for us because we're so used to. We've grown up in Babylon. It's what we're used to. It's all we know. It's like if you're familiar with the movie The Matrix, I'd watch the edited version if I were you. You'll see that, or in that movie, the people, the general public, are essentially all asleep, and they're participating in a network, a neural network that's generated by computers. So they go about their daily lives thinking they're living like we do, and come to find out they're all plugged into the giant computer system. And I liken that to our position in the world today as Latter-day Saints. We are so used to Gentile economics that we see it as normal, we see it as desirable, and many see it as God-given. That this is how he wants it to be. And if we're poor, it's because we're not working hard, which is fantasy. There are many poor people who work very diligently and can't get on top of their financial situations. And there are many wealthy people who are corrupt and wicked. And not all of them, obviously. But we Latter-day Saint Americans see the Gentile economy as just the way it is. And we probably should give more thought to how can we organize our businesses? How can we organize our businesses in ways that would be more pleasing to God? How can we organize in a way that would fulfill God's directive that if you're not one, you're not mine? And 4 weeks from now, we'll share those quotes by the brethren during the 1800s that explain how cooperatives, they saw cooperative free enterprise as a stepping stone to the United Order. And I believe that that's the way we can move back in the direction towards building Zion societies, is to work together for gifted businessmen who are Latter-day Saints, who covenant in their temple to give all they have and are to the church for the building up of Zion. These people with their talents can get together and help set up cooperatives where saints can participate, so we can move back in the direction that the apostles and prophets in the 1800s were trying to move the saints, kicking and screaming. In fact, I have a chart somewhere. I don't know if it's on buildingzion.org or not. I believe it is, but I don't think I could find it really quickly. That shows how the church has jumped from back in the days when they were actively involved in economic innovation. They jumped from the world's economy, which I would say is a telestial level economy, under Joseph, they attempted to jump from telestial to the celestial level. The original United Orders is revealed in the Doctrine and Covenants. And the people couldn't handle it. And so they dropped back down to the telestial level for a while until they got to Utah. And then Brigham, seeing the division of the people into classes, and said, no, we're not going to do this. We need to move back in the direction that Joseph was guiding us to. Brigham started, it wasn't his idea, but he got the whole church to get involved in the cooperative movement, where they were more joint stock companies, where the participants, the people who, well, you could call them worker-owned cooperatives, the people who worked in those cooperatives owned it, as well as people in the community owned it. And so the idea was that the profits would be spread as broadly as possible among the members. So you wouldn't have a few people getting wealthy off owning the stock of the company, but the wealth would be distributed among the mass of people. And as I mentioned in previous calls, Brigham City was the best example of this. They had, I can't remember how many thousand people lived there in the 1870s. Excuse me, going to get a cough drop. But all the people who, once they got it going, all the people in Brigham City worked for one of the cooperatives in the network of cooperatives they established under Lorenzo Snow's direction. And anyway, you probably should get back to the idea of what holds us back from building Zion. I believe it's fear, for one, fear of change. Our Gentile economy trains us to be fearful of scarcity. And instead of embracing the abundance that God has blessed us with in this world, we're afraid that, you know, if we leave his employ, what will become of us? If we leave Lucifer's employ in his system. So cooperatives, I believe, are the way back. Oh, that's what I was doing. I was sharing with you that that chart that is somewhere on buildingzion.org. So Joseph tried bringing the saints up to the celestial level. Didn't work. So Brigham then tried to bring them up to what I imagine could be described as a terrestrial level economics, you know, with the cooperatives. And then there was 1872, I believe it was, there was a worldwide economic crisis. No, I don't remember what year it was. It must have been 75. Anyway, I don't have the years memorized, but there was an economic crisis in the world, and Brigham thought, okay, well, for 10 years we've been doing the co-ops. Maybe the church can handle it now. Let's move to a higher level of economic organization. And that's when he introduced the United Orders, organized all the couple hundred of the Latter-day Saint communities into United Orders of one kind or another. There were actually four different kinds. The Orderville Co-ops was one of the four kinds. And his attempt to bring the saints up to the next level pretty much failed. Within 2 or 3 years, something like 80 or 90% of the United Orders failed. So the saints couldn't handle it anything higher than the terrestrial level cooperatives. So then Brigham Young died right after the co-ops the United Orders mostly failed. So John Taylor says, okay, we know that we can handle the cooperative level. Let's focus on that. And he specifically stated, let's prepare the saints to get back to the United Order through these cooperatives. And so he established something that you probably never heard of, and I had never heard of until I ran across it in this study, and that is one reporter suggested was John Taylor's greatest achievement, and that is the Zion Central Board of Trade. And you can look it up on Wikipedia. I actually wrote that article there after researching it down at the BYU library, reading their founding documents and reports by historians about it. And the focus was, let's get our best businessmen together and put them on a board, and that board would essentially function as an economic development board, we would call it today. And their goal and role was to find unmet economic needs in the community, and organize the unemployed and underutilized resources into cooperatives, and essentially do for the entire western United States what Lorenzo Snow did for Brigham City, create a network of interconnected network of cooperatives. Unfortunately, the Zion Central Board of Trade only operated for, I don't remember exactly, but it was less than 10 years. In fact, much less, I believe. And they were going gangbusters, making great progress. In fact, they had an annual conference in the October General Conference time. So after regular October General Conference, they had their economic conference where stake presidents representing all of the stake boards of trade across the western United States came together at conference time, and they shared the research that they had done into various different economic needs of the saints. And there were, like, I can't remember, 40-something different topics. The production of iron was, I believe, the number one issue, and steel. And so they share, it was essentially an economic convention of the saints. And out of that convention came the forefather of Geneva Steelworks here in Utah County. Out of that convention came, resulted in the sugar beet industry in Utah, and a wagon and farm implements co-op that lasted for 4 decades, I believe. So I'm taking the long way around of saying, if we're going back in the direction towards building economic unity among the saints, it makes sense to me to start where John Taylor left off. His Board of Trades was destroyed when the federal government essentially conquered the church by enforcing the Edmunds Anti-Polygamy Act in the late 1800s. And so all the leaders of all the boards of trade, all the leftover United Orders, all the leftover cooperatives, all either went to jail or went into hiding because they were the leaders of these organizations. And so everything drifted back to the telestial level of economics in the church, and that's where we've been ever since. In a very real way, the church, or modern Israel, was conquered by the U.S. government, in other words, modern Egypt. So we are literally, as a church, economic we are literally economic slaves in modern Egypt. And the way out of that, I believe, is for individual Latter-day Saints to work together to start moving back in the direction of the United Orders, economic unity and cooperation. And we can do that by setting up boards of trade, which create cooperatives and show the Latter-day Saints that cooperation is better than competition. Well, usually Joyce or Andrea or Mark are with me on this call, and from this point on we would chat about things we can do today to build Zion. So I get to carry the conversation myself tonight, which is fine. One thing I ran across recently, and I posted a video link to this on the Zion Society Facebook page. A Latter-day Saint brother in... okay, where is it? David Richens. He has a series of videos on YouTube called Ownership Economy. And essentially he's, in non-religious terms, describing an alternative to the capitalism-socialism seesaw and saying this type of economy would solve the problems and essentially, you know, move us in the direction of a Zion society. One in video 7 of his series, let me find my notes on that. In video 7 of his series, he mentions three principles for implementing that kind of economy, what he calls an ownership economy. And I believe, if I understood correctly, basically another way of describing it in more Mormon terms would be a stewardship economy, where individual families own productive capital, so the means of production, so like farm equipment or manufacturing equipment, and that's their stewardship. So he refers to that as an ownership economy, where everybody owns productive capital, not just a few businessmen who profit off that. So the three principles that he introduces at about the 5-minute mark on video 7 are: one, we must seek to become owners of productive capital. So own the means of production of some kind of good or service. Second, that we should derive value from owning that productive capital on a long-term basis rather than buying and selling of capital, which is a traditional capitalist thing to do. And the third principle, that we must manage that productive capital actively and directly. In other words, we're not hiring a bunch of people to work our factory for us, but we're actively involved in that. So I see those principles can be applied on the family basis, in your home. And the way I translate that into what can I do today to build Zion is each family can prepare to participate in a Zion community or Zion prep community by actively living those principles. And my example would be my productive capital at this moment, or some of it, includes my chickens and my chicken coop and my fruit and nut trees. Those are productive capital. They allow me to produce products that can be used. I derive value from their long-term use, which is the second principle he mentions, and I manage them actively and directly, which is the third principle. So if each individual family who's interested in building Zion could come up with some means of production of some good or service that they can operate outside of their regular Babylon job, kind of as a side project, well, let's say, you know, leather working. If you want to take up leather working and learn how to produce boots and jackets and belts and whatever else we can make out of leather, you get those tools, you learn how to use them, you produce those products, then you're following these three principles in doing that. Again, I mentioned on previous calls, this Babylon economy, as I refer to it, we live in the United States, we see the cracks in the plaster all over the place, the burgeoning debt the United States is in, the shakiness of our currency. If the Chinese and Brazil, if the BRICS organization, which is Brazil, I forget all the countries involved, South Africa, China, I believe it's Australia, they're working to create an alternative world currency to the U.S. dollar. And if that goes through, the U.S. dollar will become worthless. And at that point, your job won't be able to pay you And if they do, they'll pay you in dollars that are worthless. And so as individual families, if we have a backup good or service that we can produce, and we already have worked together to create a marketing distribution network among ourselves, then the day that that we're unable to benefit from going to our traditional Gentile jobs, the day that happens, we immediately spend our full time working on our alternative economy. So essentially, we create the backup economy for ourselves, and when the Gentile economy crumbles from its own weaknesses, we immediately kick in full-time on ours. To me, that's the most prudent approach we could possibly take as a people, as people who are interested in doing things God's way. He definitely wants our happiness, and that includes organizing us economically in ways that contribute to our joy and happiness. So I outline another, essentially a version of this strategy on buildingzion.org in the menu. It's under best practices. It makes sense to me to start where John Taylor left off and establish a Zion Board of Trade. I actually pitched that idea back when we had such bad unemployment to my state president. Essentially laid it out, showed him how John Taylor did it, showed him how we could apply it today. And I got that smile, and we'll get back to you. but it's hard to expect people to jump on board when they're so used to the way things are done now, traditionally. And then step two on my best practices strategy is, as a board, follow Lorenzo Snow's example in Brigham City by launching a cooperative to sell products produced by our members. So produced in their part-time family businesses, like those leather products I was mentioning as an example, or the eggs from my chickens, or the fruit from my tree. And that the profits, just like Lorenzo Snow did, the profits from the marketing co-op were used to set up other people, help them get their capital, their productive capital, and set them up in business and co-ops. And the profits from those businesses then go to create more co-ops. And that's how Lorenzo Snow grew his Brigham City cooperative from one marketing co-op to encompassing the entire economy of Brigham City. And they produced 85% of their consumer goods locally. And when the entire world is experiencing the 1871 recession, Brigham City hardly even noticed because they were independent and self-reliant. So it makes sense, perfect sense to me, that we follow that same strategy. All right. I've heard a couple of people on the call. If anybody wants to chime in, now would be the time. Otherwise, I'm going to sign off.
Hey, Jesse, this is Mark. I've been here.
Hey, Mark.
Whole time. Hey.
How you doing?
Doing great.
What's your thoughts?
I think we ought to, start one. I'd be willing to help marketing-wise or teaching people how to, build a basic website and how to sell products online. And, and I think maybe we ought to start to get it started, just find things that we're all willing to let go of for the sake of Zion and then give it to the co-op and let the co-op sell it. And then that will give it the seed capital it needs to get started.
Sounds like a great idea.
I'd be willing to, let go of some things that the co-op could sell and have all the money from it. And, because I think we, you know, we all got to start somewhere, and I think that's probably a good place to start. And, you know, and if there's a group of people, you know, I don't care if it's one person or 10 people, if they all wanted to get together to say, okay, teach me how to build the basics of a website, or teach me how to get ranked for a search term so I can create sales, you know, I'd be more than willing to teach that for free, and, you know, wouldn't want any money. So, you know, when I've been thinking about, you know, what holds us back, I think over the past few years, I've been waiting for somebody to say, oh, well, I've got some land, or this guy donated some land, and so, you know, been waiting for some place to be able to say, okay, here's where we're going to build it, and then, you know, start bringing stuff out and start building, you know, put up tents and buildings, start building buildings. And, you know, I've kind of been waiting for somebody else because, you know, I don't have the funds to go buy, you know, 20 acres or 100 acres. So
I thought you inherited $10 million.
No, it wasn't me. That was your other friend named Mark.
That was my other friend. Ah. Well, you know, that strategy of this strategy that I'm talking about, I'm not the only one who's taking this approach of building the economic engine first and then using that to transition people to a community. David, what's David's last name? Escapes me. Hall. David Hall, his website, if you Google the term, I hate getting old. Anyway, he's a multimillionaire who has been studying the Zion Plat Map that Joseph Smith created for decades and coming up with strategies on how that might be implemented today and create an alternative economy or Zion-like economy. He doesn't use the word Zion. He says, I did have a chance to visit with him once, and he said, I learned to not use the word Zion around Latter-day Saints. I thought, wow, that's sad. But David, he's been in the news lately. A couple months ago, big stink in Vermont. He bought a bunch of land up there near Joseph Smith's family's homestead. And he's buying up homes right next to BYU, just west of the Provo Temple, in that neighborhood who
torpedoed temple, right? The new temple.
The old temple. The regular Provo Temple. Neighborhood west of... So the neighborhood that surrounds the MTC,
right.
He's buying up homes in that neighborhood, and he plans to tear them all down and to build a tower, and that tower would use his system of... it's a trust system, and basically it's a united order. I appreciate the guys. I mean, he's out doing it. He's not just talking about it. And he's built businesses that are part of his trust network. And I wish the guy well, but he's sure stepping on a lot of toes and getting a lot of people mad at him. The very same people in that neighborhood in Provo who torpedoed the church's desire to build a MTC high-rise because it would ruin their view. Latter-day Saints who've, you know, covenanted all they've had to the church to build up Zion torpedoed the church's attempt to build an MTC six or seven stories high. Anyway, so David is buying up all their homes, which is kind of ironic, kind of interesting development. But anyway, so David's approach is the same. He's saying, I'm building these economic engine, these different businesses, and his focus is on high tech, which doesn't really ring well with me because of all the potential weaknesses of a high tech economy.
Right.
You know, EMP bursts and those kinds of things. terrorists taking out the power grid would make a high-tech economy impossible.
Yep.
So to me, it makes more sense to build an economic engine that could endure catastrophes rather than be destroyed by them. So anyway, I love the idea, Mark. Your idea, Mark, of donating products and we'll sell them and start a fund. It's a great idea. I can't remember if I've told you this, Mark, but I've transitioned my website marketing company into a business where I sell goods on Amazon. I'm a professional Amazon merchant, I think it's called.
Okay.
Well,
love to help you make more sales. And obviously, I don't want any money, so and I can get you ranked for any search term you want.
I appreciate that. So what I'm thinking is, Andrea and I have been talking on a separate Facebook group about building a cooperative for products that we produce. And
right.
We'll probably include you in that, Mark.
Okay.
And
yeah. Happy to help.
This is all new territory, so we're kind of feeling as we go. She's a full-time mom, and I'm working my business full-time, trying to get out of the debt that the market crash brought upon me.
Right.
And but we can make baby steps, move in that direction, set up a marketing cooperative, start selling locally produced products through it. Reinvest the profits back into the co-op, set other people up in to help them get some productive capital.
Okay.
Well,
I'm going to buy a bunch of Real Salt this week from Real Salt. So I'll have, a bunch of bags and, if the co-op wants to sell them, I'm okay with them keeping the money, the co-op keeping the money.
Okay.
So,
well, let me sign you up. Let me add you on the co-op group, we'll talk about details there.
Okay. If anybody wants help building something online or wants to sell stuff online, I'd more than willing to help or coach them through that too.
Okay, great. I guess they can contact you on the Zion Society Facebook page.
Yep.
That'd probably be good to contact you there about that.
Okay.
I approached a good friend of mine. He's actually my last website marketing customer who I still have, who's a very successful businessman, LDS, just an awesome person. He's probably... I've said in the past he's the only person I would ever work for. Just a great guy. And I pitched him on the idea of the Zion Board of Trade. And I think what one of the challenges we'll run into is essentially his response and his viewpoint. He says, I'm successful, and he is. And I use, he's aware of his covenant of consecration. He's doing amazing things with a nonprofit group in Mexico and Haiti and somewhere in Africa where they build orphanages. In fact, I went with him for a week a couple of years ago to one of the orphanages they've helped in Mexico. And he's doing marvelous work. He's blessing people's lives in a very real way with his wealth. And he sees that as his contribution to, building Zion kind of thing. And as notable and as wonderful and, million kudos his direction as that is, I hope that we can come up with a way of persuading, like Brigham tried to do, persuading successful, gifted LDS businessmen to join efforts in a board of trade and take advantage or you know, work together with them to build co-ops, to start following the example of the Catholics in northern Spain. Gosh, they put us to shame. You're familiar with the Mondragon Cooperative Network, Mark?
No, haven't heard of that.
Really? Oh, my gosh. I learned about them when I was at BYU the last time, when I was there to finish my bachelor's degree. And there's a BYU, I'm sure he's retired now, Warner Woodworth. He's a BYU organizational behavior professor, or was. And he wrote several articles about the cooperative network in northern Spain. And our time's running short here today. I want to go spend time with my wife. But maybe we can talk about it in greater detail. But a Catholic priest in the 1950s set up a school where he taught the local kids in his parish cooperative free enterprise. And these kids graduated and said, gosh, the only options we have are to work for competitive enterprises. So they started creating co-ops, and now there's a network of over 250 co-ops. They employ 74,000 plus people in northern Spain, and they have their own banking system, they have their own healthcare system, they have their own retirement programs. They're essentially a self-sustaining community in northern Spain, and in my opinion, they put us Latter-day Saints to shame. Our history of through the entire Utah period from 1849 until 1889, they were actively pursuing building a cooperative-based economy in Utah. And we gave up after the polygamy raids and haven't looked back, which amazes me. If we're God's people, you would think we would be interested in organizing in the way God wants us to as his people for our mutual benefit. So anyway, we'll in future calls, we'll talk about that. Next week, oh, I can't wait. Next week, the quotes are about economic independence and how important that is, that Zion includes manufacturing all our own consumer goods and being independent of Babylon, because when she falls, we don't want to go with her. So, Mark and everyone else listening, thanks for listening and your participation, and wish you a good week. Goodbye.